Hello everyone and welcome to the Smashy Business Show. Today is Monday, April 7, 2025. I'm Abdul Majid Awan.
And I'm Warid Ahmed, and we have a great show for you today. Now, for today's headlines, firstly, Aramco has lost $90 billion as Middle Eastern markets are crashing. And secondly, Jordan is risking a sharp economic hit as it is the Middle East's most country that is exposed to the new U.S. tariffs imposed by Donald Trump. And finally, Dubai is going to build an 8-lane bridge over Dubai Creek to ease traffic and support growth.
First of all, the very first story, it's all red. That's the main story. It's all red.
Extremely red.
Extreme fear and everything. But to be honest, Middle Eastern stocks suffered their worst losses since 2020 on Sunday. So if I just go by the script and by the word of it, it's a lot of fear that we've seen in the market. And it's not only the global trade war that we want to see, that we don't want to see, actually. We will see most probably. Because Trump put tariffs on the world, China retaliated with 34% tariffs, and that's what's happening. But there's oil prices as well that are going down. And Saudi Arabia's main exchange, which is called Tadawul, and the parallel market is Nomu, it fell, Tadawul fell nearly 6.7%. That's just to compare like how big 6.67% is, that Aramco lost $90 billion. That's just one company listed on it. So 6.7% is a lot. Mm. While Qatar and Kuwait markets also dropped over 5.5%. Egypt's EGX 30, that also fell 3.3%.
Now, oil prices added to the sell-off. Now, Brent crude tumbled 13% across Friday after OPEC surprised markets by announcing a massive increase in supply, three times more than initially planned for May. Now, analysts warn this could lead to oversupply and significant downside risk for oil prices moving forward.
And Saudi Aramco, the world's largest oil exporter, was among the hardest hit, losing over $90 billion in market value at one point. All four affected exchanges, Saudi, Qatar, Kuwait, Egypt, they were closed on Friday, meaning Sunday was their first opportunity to react to the global developments. Oil prices added to the sell-off. Brent crude tumbled 13% across Thursday and Friday after OPEC surprised markets by announcing a massive increase in supply, three times more than initially planned for May. Analysts warn this could lead to oversupply and significant downside risk for oil prices moving forward.
Now, Asian markets plunged on Monday following Wall Street's sharp losses triggered by escalating U.S.-China trade tensions. Now, U.S. President Donald Trump, tariff hikes, and China's retaliatory measures rattled global investor sentiment. Now, the U.S. futures pointed to further declines with an S&P of 50, Dow Jones, and Nasdaq futures all down over 5%.
And there's Fadi Arbid of Ambal Capital, who says regional markets often mirror global sentiment. He told this to Bloomberg. He cites the financial crash and COVID-19 as past examples. Lower oil prices threaten government spending and diversification plans, especially in Saudi Arabia, which needs oil above $90 per barrel to balance its budget as per IMF.
And Trump is set to visit Saudi Arabia soon, while the 10% U.S. tariff on GCC countries is seen as minor. The broader geopolitical and economic implications are weighing heavily on investor confidence across the region.
And right now, as we are talking at 10 a.m. in the morning, the UAE markets have opened right in front of me. The DFMGI, which is the Dubai Financial Market General Index, it opened minus 5.393%. So imagine Kuwait and Qatar, they went through the whole Sunday and they dropped 5.5%. DFMGI is right now in front of me, nearly 5% down. It's 5.393. It's going up and down.
Can you check ADX?
Yeah, I'm checking. And ADX is minus 3.256%. So yeah, these markets were supposed to open in negative because Saudi Tadawul, EGX, Qatar's Bursa, Kuwait, all of them had a very, very bad day. And we were having this chat with Rich in the morning. And it's the idea is very clear. It's COVID-like scenario right now. Like in COVID, all the markets were red and extreme fair, so very dark shade of red. Mm-hmm. Bert can tell us what that shade is called, if there is a name for that very dark shade.
But you know what it also is, Majid, that was really interesting? It's the fact that, you know, Rich was saying that the radio wasn't covering that.
Yeah.
You know, they were just talking about China. And the Asian market. And I think this is why it's so worth it right now to give Smashy Business a read, because we're covering this every single step of the way. And, you know, whether you're just a reader or you're an investor, you know, this is a good time to be awake. It's a good time to be awake and know what's happening. But I think the Middle East will survive.
Yeah, see, the only thing that I think will happen is they will go down. We have to talk about Trump at this point, because that's his tariffs which are doing whatever is happening to the world market. Everyone is questioning his decision. Even the formula that they used, we will throw some light on it. It's basically, there is a Bloomberg opinion on it, a very long one. If you want to read, just go and read it. Sometimes Bloomberg asks for subscriptions. We have a cheat code. We'd like to share it. Go to Yahoo. Yahoo News has all the Bloomberg articles. So yeah, just go there and read that formula problem. It's very clear that they didn't think about, overthink even about it, not even merely think. The formula is about budget deficits, not about the tariff that you have. So for some countries like UAE and Saudi and all the countries, we have only 10% tariff, so that's good. But with other countries, they didn't think about the tariffs. A lot of countries came out, the economic ministers, the prime ministers, the presidents, they came out and they were like, we're just doing 6.7, 7%, 8% tariffs on you. Why are you slapping 30, 40% in return? So they didn't do the calculation. They just went in with this new idea that, oh, we'll tariff everyone, reciprocal tariff, this, that. But it's not working out. The markets are down. It's not only us. It's the American markets as well. NASDAQ, New York Stock Exchange. Everyone is so bad. The usual sentiment is that at this point, people go for gold, people go for bonds, other measures. They try to, like, they do damage control in very easy words. They try to do damage control. But right now, even those are down.
But Majid, you know what's also, I think, scary about all of this entirely? It's hearing that, you know, Aramco, one of the largest oil exporters in the world, for it to just lose $90 billion.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like that in itself really stamps this all down as a reality. Because I remember, you know, for myself, when I was reading the entire story, you know, the U.S., it's imposing tariffs, reciprocal tariffs. I was like, okay. But now that I'm reading this, it's like, okay, this is bad.
Yeah, it's very bad. The thing is that every stock market has some bellwethers. They're called bellwethers. The stocks which, when they go down, you see clearly that there is something wrong happening. So Saudi market, Aramco is the bellwether. For DFM, if I'm not wrong, Emaar is, because Emaar is the largest shareholder. They're very big.
Recently, so, we reported that they lost profits.
Yeah, Emaar also 9%? Was 10%, nearly 10%, yeah. They lost nearly $11 billion on that also. So markets are reacting to what the tariffs are. The only solution to this is either he goes back or revises them. Because, see, two of the biggest economies in the world, America and China, they've put tariffs on each other. We use Chinese products, we use American products. So everyone else is being affected. What I read about the European Union, the European Commission, everyone from Europe, they're very scared of, like, firing back. So Trump has fired at them. They're not firing back. They're like, okay, we'll take a cautious approach. We'll meet him and decide.
Likewise, I think that's very smart.
Yeah, and likewise with Middle East also. He's coming here, so we didn't react as badly as well. But the problem is that the world's largest growing economy, China, they reacted. So people are now afraid of what is going to happen.
What was the tariff?
34%. So they already had like 20%, 25%, then more. Eventually, it led to 34% tariff from the U.S. on China.
I think their reaction is justifiable, Majid.
It's justifiable for China, but the whole world is looking at a recession now. The only thing that can stop it, I personally believe, it's not a, like, a very strong financial opinion, but a very learned opinion, which I've, like, done over 10 years, that when even the 2008 recession happened, we saw a lot of movies come out on it as well. That was the first thing after the recession.
Honestly, I've never seen someone as excited as an upcoming recession as you are.
It's
can you please
exciting.
Explain
it's
why?
It's like you see history unfold in front of you. It's exciting for not, to be honest, not for anyone. But the excitement, the energy that you see is, it's history in the making. It's like a president making a decision which will shake the whole world. It's like world war, but in terms of finances. That is why it's called trade war. Because now everyone will start following China's suit. Maybe some country will come back and be like, okay, China placed return tariffs, we will do it. So it will start a trade war, and that is the worst war you can have. Because people, at the end of the day, it's always, I was told by one of the oldest business journalists I know, that whenever you talk about any business story, look at what the consumer will feel. And the consumers will feel heightened prices, lower pay cuts, budget cuts, all that. And then with that, they have higher prices to pay for. So it's always bad for the common people. I don't think Trump will be affected if he has like $50 billion in worth. Even if you cut it half, it'll be 25. Even if you cut it by 90%, he'll still stand at like $5 billion. The common person doesn't have that kind of saving. A common person is on 20, 30,000, I think, of savings. And when the cost prices of everything goes up, their basic bread basket, their basic purchasing power parity, which is like a basket of fruit and all that stuff, very nice term that I learned, purchasing power parity. So that goes up. So if a basket of basic essential costed them $100, now it will, with all these tariffs in place, it will cost them $300, $400. And that is where the recession hurts.
When have we ever known Donald Trump to make sound decisions, though? You know, just recently.
In his businesses, he's a very good businessman, very good negotiator. He built an empire. Kudos to him. But right now, with this situation, he's not handling it nicely. Everyone is questioning him, even his ministers.
You know what I'm also questioning, Majid? You know, we just recently covered a story on Smashy Business, and it was basically about this Lebanese businessman, and his name is Massad Buenos. I hope I'm saying his name right. But it was so interesting because Trump actually named him Africa's envoy.
Yeah.
Currently, as we speak, the number one official, the number one correspondent and ambassador for Africa from the U.S. is actually this man. It's this Lebanese businessman. Yeah. And what's interesting, his ties to Trump are the fact that his son is married to Tiffany Trump, the daughter of Donald Trump.
Younger daughter, I think.
I believe the younger daughter. But it was just really interesting because, you know, while this Lebanese businessman, Massad, yes, he has a Nigerian upbringing, although he was like Lebanese born. He was brought up in Nigeria. I believe that his family even speaks the language, and he also has this business. It's called SCOA Nigeria.
Yeah.
But the entire story, it's very strange because when you take a look at it, to someone like me, you know, who's from Sudan, to someone from Egypt, Morocco, Libya, the real question here is why is our envoy someone who's not even from Africa?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
I think he spent a lot of time in Nigeria, so they're like, oh, he knows the region, so let's make him the envoy. But yeah, representation-wise, I think it should be an African person, to be honest. There's a lot of American Africans in the country. They could have made someone else. But I think Trump, you see very clearly in all his appointments that he keeps people close and then gives them the responsibilities that he wants. So, that's the reason.
And also recently we saw how Jared Kushner, his son-in-law, basically,
his company,
I believe
Affinity
it's called
Partners.
Yes, Affinity Partners. Its valuation went up from $2 billion,
nearly,
so I believe
$4.5 billion.
And the actual reason for this is because he's being funded by Qatar Investment Authority, and there was another. There was someone else there, Majid.
I think it's Abu Dhabi's Lunate.
Yes, yeah. Abu Dhabi's Lunate. So I think it's very interesting how everything ties into itself. And you'll have someone like Jared Kushner who'll tell you that, you know, me being associated with Donald Trump doesn't get me any benefits. But
and
are
I
you
also
sure
don't
about
promise
that?
Any benefits since he is the president. He also said that. Yeah, it's very interesting. Politics, business can't separate it, but economy-wise, yeah, we can talk about only economy. And since she mentioned so many Middle Eastern countries, Jordan is one of the countries that faces the sharpest economic hit in the Middle East from new U.S. tariffs, becoming the region's most exposed country. Despite a free trade agreement in place since 2010 with Washington, Washington has still imposed a 20% tariff on Jordanian exports, raising concerns about growth and deepening its already significant current account deficit.
Now, according to Fitch-owned BMI, Jordan's economy is forecasted to grow 2.1% in 2025, down from 2.2% last year, with a projected current account deficit of 7.4% of GDP. Now, Jordan's exports to the U.S. make up nearly 6.6% of its GDP, more than any other MENA country, making it especially vulnerable.
And despite the 20% tariff, BMI says Jordan may remain competitive at this rate, and it's still lower than other tariffs, obviously 40-60% that he's imposed on other countries. But they have to export similar goods to the U.S. and maybe increase the quantities. Jordan's top exports to U.S. include garments, jewelry, fertilizers, pharmaceuticals, and IT services, while imports from the U.S. cover a wide range of goods.
Now, the economic strain comes as the U.S. also shuts down U.S. aid operations in Jordan, cutting off a vital funding stream for them. Now, one NGO had described the impact as absolutely devastating, especially for vulnerable populations like refugees and people with disabilities. Jordan was U.S. aid's third largest recipient before the February closure.
Yes, and across the region, other MENA countries are also facing the problems because of tariffs. Tariffs now range from 10% in the Gulf to 41% in Syria. That is one of the countries which was highly affected by the tariffs. Oil, however, remains largely exempt, shielding key exporters like Saudi Arabia, Iraq, and Libya from the worst impacts.
Now, you know, as we take a look at this entire story, Majid, I feel really bad.
Yeah.
I feel really bad.
You feel bad for some of the economies. We did an analysis of all the tariffs that were placed on the MENA countries. 10% is like the average on a lot of countries. But Jordan was the most affected one. Syria is at 41%. But you really don't count Syria in like tariff territory because they have sanctions on them as well. So U.S. doesn't do trade with them. U.S. doesn't allow trade with them because of Bashar al-Assad, who was there. Mm-hmm. And then he left, and now there's a new government. So they're still looking at how U.S. will eventually ease the sanctions. Mm-hmm. They'll allow their goods to go into Syria and Syrian goods to come to U.S. But the good thing about Syria is Europe is on their side. So basically, I was talking to someone, I think it was Rich, or even we discussed it also, that Europe versus U.S. fight is happening in Syria right now. It's like a global cold war, but in terms of trade, because EU has over last like 2 months, whatever I've read, if I calculated, around 14 to 15 billion aid they have allocated to Syria. But US is still not easing any sanctions on them, even with them forming a good government, new government, led by their leader, Ahmed al-Shara. So it's kind of like US and EU are thinking Syria of as a global trade Cold War background. So EU is supporting them a lot. US is like, no, we won't support you because you're already getting support from Europe. So it's a very complicated situation right now for Syria. Jordan is facing problems.
But you know, Majid, when I take a look at, you know, like a country like Jordan, I think something that I never realized before that I truly see now is the protesting spirit that they have in Jordan is absolutely beautiful. Yeah. And you know, I feel like we've seen that time and time again. Recently I saw this some really creative ad that was created by this like shoe store in Jordan. Yeah. And the ad basically said, our shoes are cheaper than Eddie Cohen. And I believe that Eddie Cohen is an Israeli journalist. And you know, we've seen time and time again that, you know, their boycotts, their protesting efforts, you know, they have very beautiful voices, and they have very beautiful ideas that they do express, and they do get out there, and it does actually make change. And we've seen that in Majd al-Futtaim. Yeah. We've seen how, because they've protested against what's going on in Palestine, Carrefour completely shut down in Jordan. You know, what other country do you hear of that in?
And Majid al-Futaim had to like rework into hyper.
Completely give them a new replacement. And, and that's how, when I take a look at stories like this, I think, you know, yes, they will be affected by, you know, by these very high tariffs. But much other than that, you know, they're a shab with such a beautiful voice and such a beautiful spirit. And they'll keep going.
Yeah.
I think they're going to be completely okay.
The irony for me is that they depend a lot on U.S. in terms of trade and money. And U.S. aid, when they shut it down, I remember Jordan was one of the biggest affected. There's camps there which are like supported by U.S. aid money. There's camps in Syria which are supported by U.S. aid money. The only irony for me is that on one side, U.S. aid kind of was supporting a lot of infrastructure development and a lot of monetary problems that they had. But they were against them because of whatever Israel is doing in Gaza, the genocide that they're carrying out. So it's kind of like you're dependent on them, but you know that they're evil. But they have made such a nice web for you that you can't escape them. So this is what U.S. has done over the last some decades, that they've caught everyone's financial this artery, and they don't let them go. Even if the country as a whole is protesting against them, U.S. somehow holds them financially.
But this is not the
soft power. This is the financial power that U.S. has over a lot of countries.
But you know what it also is, Majid? I remember there was this term that was recently coined, and it was basically called, you know, عقدة الإنجليز. Remember that video that we were watching, I believe, from the Arab Spring? And basically what it was saying, that for the longest time ever, there has been this trend in the Arab region where, you know, instead of prioritizing our own economies, building our own local products and a very large local market, what have we all been doing? We've been moving. You know, we've been immigrating to Western countries, helping build their economies. And for all the people who are left back home, you know, they're left to basically accept and deal with the small scraps that they actually get from America and they actually get from the U.S. Like, for example, with Sudan, Majid, I will never forget the feeling of hearing KFC has finally opened in Sudan. Do you know how long that took? I'm pretty sure that it happened actually very recently. I think it was like 2020. It's not something that has happened a long time ago, because the last time I visited Sudan, it was 2018. Uh-huh. I'll never forget the excitement of hearing that KFC is there, Pizza Hut is there. And by the way, it took a very, very long time. Yeah. I never got to taste it there. I never got to. But I think this also has to do with the fact that people are so obsessed with the West. They're so obsessed with their products. They're so obsessed with their food. I am one of those people. Maybe not so much anymore.
I think it's good marketing for them because of them. They did good marketing. They made their products. They made their products and sent it into global markets so that people get addicted, even if not addicted, used to. So if you go to a mall right now, to be honest, anywhere, not even Middle East, anywhere in the world, and you don't see one of like McDonald's, Pizza Hut, KFC's, Domino's, or some of the brands, you'll be like, what kind of a mall is this, right? So it's such like clever, I won't say it nice, it's clever marketing that these big brands from the US, they became so global that they somehow, if they're not there in the mall, you think of the mall as being very low grade or something.
It's something is off here. And I don't think it just has to do with like these fast food stores, Majid. It also has to do with grocery shopping. I mean, look at PepsiCo. You know, this is a brand that owns Pepsi, Miranda, 7-Up, Mountain Dew, Schweppes. I believe also Doritos, Cheetos, Tostitos. And in your mind, you don't actually deep this when you're buying them. That's just something casual that's there. And by the way, Arabs are so obsessed with Cheetos.
I think those are the best creations by humans. It's a trend here, though,
to like add it to like mac and cheese, add it to burgers, add it to shawarma. It's like an extremely big trend.
Cheetos I always thought it was like a normal brand, but it's kind of like a luxury brand for me and for a lot of South Asians. Yeah. Why? Because in Pakistan, a Cheetos pack, if you convert it into dirham, goes for at least 25 to 30 dirhams. Here, the biggest pack that you have is for seven and a half, maximum eight. If you go to
Cheetos pack costs 25 dirhams in
Pakistan.
Yeah,
because we don't make it, or there is no production and there is no official supplier, so they're re-exported. So they come to some other country and then they're re-exported. So there's so much tax on it. So in Pakistan, in Bangladesh, in a lot of countries, it's a luxury product which you only buy when you go to a store which sells imported stores.
It did feel like that back in Sudan. And, right? And you know what we do magic?
For us, Doritos is very normal, like, right? 7.5, 8 dirhams is like, buying normal chips, the biggest pack. But in those countries, it's a luxury. So they've made it so difficult. I remember I went to Turkey for the first time, and before that, I'd never been out of Pakistan. And I bought Doritos, and I had like 8 big packs, and one suitcase was full of them. And when I went to the airport, the Turkish guys were like, what's happening here?
Wait,
I
was like, brought that it's in very... from Turkey?
So I went to Turkey and I bought a lot of them because in Turkey they have local production. So they produce Doritos in Turkey.
And you took it back to Pakistan? Or...
Yeah, I took it back to Pakistan. A lot of packets that I'll distribute and then I'll eat them also. So the guys were like, what's happening? Why is this whole suitcase full of Doritos?
I don't even blame you, because what I was just about to tell you is every single time I'd go for like my very big summer holiday in Sudan, I'd stay there for like 2 to 3 months. Do you know what my mother would do? She'd fill up like a suitcase, and not like the mini ones, you know, like the really big suitcases, and it would all be of like American candy and products from here.
Yeah.
It would all just be Cheetos, Doritos, crackers, every single kind. And our father thought it was completely unreasonable, but when he'd get there, even he would want it, because in Sudan, these products are just not easily available.
Either they're not available or they're ultra super expensive. You can't buy them normally with that money.
But they're even specifically in specific supermarkets, by the way. They're not sold in your like average like dukan.
Or so you have to understand, this is the global, the reason we're discussing this is the global hold of these products and eventually the American economy on the world. So completely removing them is like removing one part of your body out, literally ripping it out, because you associate with these things like normally in life. You think Doritos is a normal thing, you think Pepsi, Coke, eating McDonald's, KFC, even like the lower, smaller brands of American companies, you think of them as very normal, regular brands, regular part of your life. So ripping them out literally, and what BDS movement and this new boycott app, which I learned about like 3 months
ago. Boycott app? What's it called?
Boycott app. You just, it's a scanning app. You just go scan any product and it will tell you the whole history of if that.
What is it called?
Boycott.
Boycott.
They played with the word boycott.
Boycott, okay.
We have an interview up with Paul Bigar, who is the founder of Tech for Palestine. It's like an incubator or kind of a startup which helps other startups start something. And then they basically help Palestinian engineers and software engineers and all kinds of engineers start their own startups. So they help them through the whole process. We have an interview up on our YouTube channel, on X, on LinkedIn, wherever you want to find us. You can watch it, like how it's helping. But Boycott is one of the biggest success coming out from the Tech for Palestine system. And you can just take it, scan anything, and it'll tell you that if it's very remotely linked to any American or Israeli company, if it's directly linked. So it's like it has 3 tiers. So it tells you, directly owned by Israel and American companies. Medium involvement. And then there's like the lowest category, like very distant, some like 10 years back they invested. So it's a very good thing. So coming out of the tariff problems, coming out of Jordan's economy suffering because of tariffs, coming out of oil going down, let's go to one good news finally for the day, and let's end it with that Dubai is set to ease congestion in Deira and Burdubai. If you're in Dubai, if you live in Dubai, you know those are the few of the most congested areas on road. It's very difficult to get there and then come out of there. With a major new infrastructure project, the Roads and Transportation Authority, which is RTA, announced plans to construct an 8-lane bridge over Dubai Creek, linking Infinity Bridge with the Port Rashid Development Area. The project will cost nearly 786 million dirhams and ease traffic significantly.
Now, the bridge will stretch 1.4 kilometers and carry 16,000 vehicles per hour across 4 lanes in each direction. It will rise 18.5 meters above Dubai Creek with a 75-meter-wide navigational channel to allow marine traffic to pass safely underneath, ensuring minimal disruption to maritime activities along the busy waterway.
Designed with accessibility in mind, the bridge will feature pedestrian and cycling paths also, along with elevators to assist those crossing. An additional 2 kilometers of new roads will also be constructed, connecting the bridge seamless to existing road networks in Dubai Islands and Burj Dubai.
Now, the project forms part of Dubai's broader infrastructure strategy to accommodate its fast-growing population. From 3.5 million in 2022, Dubai's population reached 3.9 million and is projected to grow to 5.8 million by 2040. To prepare, the city is heavily investing in future-ready transport infrastructure.
And in October, Dubai unveiled its largest ever government budget for 2025-2027, 2 years, allocating 272 billion dirhams in spending. In 2025 alone, 86.26 billion dirhams will be spent, with 46% going towards infrastructure. So that's like half of the budget going towards roads and bridges and everything to make your life easy on the road, covering roads, bridges, energy hubs, and the development of Al Maktoum International Airport, which is the new airport coming in Dubai.
Now, earlier this year, a 300-meter bridge connecting Sheikh Zayed Road to Mall of the Emirates was opened. Now, that project aimed to reduce travel times and ease congestion in one of Dubai's busiest districts, a strategy the city continues with this new bridge over Dubai Creek. I mean, this is so exciting because we all know how many people are starting to move here.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine, you know, it's so crazy. It's to the point that it's felt. And I live in Medina 10-4.
Yeah.
So Al Qudra and Majid, I kid you not, when kids come back to school and parents come back from their holidays and their sick leaves,
yeah,
the road.
Which is today, right?
No, seriously, the road is it's insane. Like, and it's not even when I reach like midway. It's the second I leave my community.
Yeah.
Dubai, it's becoming so populated. I think we can only hope for other people appreciating other cities more.
Yeah.
Am I going to be one of those people? No, I'm not going to be. I think I'll always be in Dubai. Maybe
yeah.
One day, Saadiyat.
It's a problem with Dubai people. They love the city, but they don't want anyone else to come in the city because I know the road problem is big. To be honest, what I've seen, if you talk about events, the DWTC, Dubai World Trade Center, busiest place when there's event season, which is starting today. There's Middle East Energy happening in DWTC. There's AIM Congress happening in Abu Dhabi, in ADNIC. They've taken like 8-9 halls. The rest of the halls are hosting an event by Sheikh Thanoun under the patronage of His Highness Sheikh Thanoun, which is like emergency response event. There's another event which our CEO is going to. There's so many
Fluidity conference.
Yeah.
And it's so beautiful because it's representing African entrepreneurs.
Oh, yeah. It's like a connection between Africa and how they can help MENA region and MENA region can help them. The main thing is that now, since Ramadan ended and everyone is back now from holidays and extended holidays, today we only have like 6-7 events starting.
I don't think everyone's back from their holiday.
Some of them are not.
The road was not too bad
today.
Right? It was not too bad.
But I think schools have opened, so I think eventually in this week we'll see everyone coming back and Dubai being back to the Dubai we know. But a lot of events are happening, so keep an eye for traffic and everything. If you're in Dubai, even in Abu Dhabi, a lot of events are happening. So just keep an eye on the road before you leave whatever place you're at.
And
so,
that's a wrap for today.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for tuning into the Smashy Business Show. Make sure to follow us on all of our social media channels at Smashy Business and stay ahead with our daily newsletter. You'll find the subscription link in the description.
And this has been a Smashy Business Show, a Smashy Business production, part of the Augustus Media Podcast Network. A big shout out to our 1.5 million monthly listeners across all platforms. Rich told me on Friday that we went up to 1.6, but we came back to 1.5. We're looking at the 2 million sweet spot. So if you're one of them, just being there and listening to us is very helpful. Thank you so much. Take care.
Have a lovely day and a great
Monday.
Week ahead.
Take care.